What were you playing, Ron and Brian?
Go to Mexico.
What's that?
Ron and Brian go to Mexico.
Everybody, and welcome to episode 75 of the Ron and Brian podcast. I'm Ron, as always, joined by the man who loves to share his great and unmatched wisdom with you each and every week, Brian. Brian, how the hell are you today, sir?
Feeling good. Slightly stressed at this moment, because right now, exactly 4,328 miles from where I am currently seated, the New York Yankees are gearing up for Game 3 of their American League Division Series. I think you know as much as I do. Huge Yankee fan over here. Never satisfied. It's a tough time this playoff season.
True, but we are up 2-0. And obviously, the bigger task lies ahead. Houston's got their series against Tampa Bay in hand at the moment, 2-1. But yeah, I feel good in us closing out this opening round tonight.
What do you mean by Houston?
I'm saying that's going to be a tougher task for the Yankees than Minnesota.
So there's more playoffs after we beat Minnesota?
There are. We are not done after this. This is actually, you may not know this, this is the division round.
I thought that we beat Minnesota, we go home, we get the World Series trophy, ticker tape yet. Parade.
We got a little bit more baseball to play.
But we can't beat the Astros.
Well, that's why we have to hope that Tampa Bay can beat them.
Tampa Bay did win earlier today, I'd like to point out. It's possible.
In convincing fashion, 10-3, getting against Zach Greinke. I can never pronounce his last name, but they got to him, and he lasted 3 1/3 innings, so there's hope. There's hope yet. Let's get things rolling here tonight.
Drink of the week.
You know what we got.
Oh, yeah.
It's always the drink. Salud.
Drink of the week.
Drink of the week. Drink of the week.
All right, Brian, what have you brought to the literal and virtual table this week that you're drinking?
All right, the literal world, I am drinking a Southern Tier blonde ale that they call 8 Days a Week.
Nice choice. What do you think of it?
Well, you know, if I had to describe it in a certain manner, I would say that this beer is how I would say that it's infinitely drinkable. I mean, it's got a smooth, liquid, refreshing flavor with almost a hint of Centennial hops for some fruity notes and a low bitterness for what I enjoy as an easy finish.
All right. You should write for some of these breweries. That sounds like it should be on the side of a can.
I did submit that for my review to beeradvocate.com. We'll see if they like it.
All right. I broke out the big bottle again this week, trying to clear out some of the older stuff. This is from Omegang, or Omegang.
Ooh.
Doesn't matter how you want to say it. Their Game of Thrones series. This is the Take the Black Stout, which is a tasty, hearty stout, which I think may have sat in the fridge a little too long.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. I actually almost got a Omegang beer. I saw their Hennepin at the... at my local beer place. So I saw it and I said, you know what? I always get Omegang. Let me go with something else. And that's when I saw Southern Tier. And I said, you guys are getting my hard-earned cash.
Have you been to Omegang up in Cooperstown yet?
So I've been there several times. A big fan of their annual camping beer festival.
Nice. Have you been to Cooperstown Brewing, though?
If I remember correctly, the year I was there, it was being housed in what looked like a white trash mobile home center, and we just drove right past it.
I will say you are correct. You were right by Cooperstown Brewing, but you missed out. They give their tasting pours with a very heavy hand.
Really?
Like you get messed up going through that tasting tour there.
All right. Well, it appeared to be too sketchy for the missus at the time, so we walked away.
All right. We'll have to make a road trip one of these days. You and I on the road to Cooperstown.
Maybe we could drive off a cliff at the end when Joe Law is following us.
Holding hands, your scarf will flutter away in the wind.
Yeah.
That's so sweet. Poetic almost. Well,
now the real question is, do you get to bang Brad Pitt or do I get to bang him?
I mean, I would give that to you. That's how much I love you.
All righty. I love you too. Right. What do we got? How is your week going, more importantly? What's going
on
with
my week? It was a hectic week. We'll get to some of the entertainment later that we partook of. One thing I will say, speaking of drinking, we went to a local fall festival, and one of the restaurants there was serving up Dogfish Head pumpkin ale, and they were rimming the glasses with caramel and cinnamon sugar, which really added to the flavor of the beer.
I almost feel like you have hit peak basic.
I have. There's no question about it. That was an ultimate basic bitch rim for a basic bitch beer, but I liked it. Do you pronounce it caramel or caramel?
Caramel.
See, I go caramel. I don't know why that is. I think it's an upstate New York thing.
Because I believe Carmel, isn't that a town in Texas where the Branch Davidians burned to death?
That was Waco.
I thought that was Carmel.
I don't believe so. Maybe they turned into Carmel after they burned. I'm not sure. But we always have that discussion in the house here, whether it's Carmel or caramel.
Mount Carmel is the town. My apologies. That was the name of the Branch Davidian compound outside of Waco.
All right. We got a ton of stuff to get to. Let's get through some of our weekly favorites that everybody's listening for.
This
Racism.
So, no surprise here again. Heather Patton getting win number two against the kids from Mason City, Iowa. Just a shutout, 100% to zero. So, second shutout in a row from Heather Patton. She unfortunately doesn't really have a challenger this week. We looked at a couple of stories. Brian, you had sent me some video of a customer at a New York pizza place, Little Vincent's, I think it was, out in Huntington, Long Island, complaining about the cashier not speaking English, but I don't know, not great audio. And the customers, to their defense, pretty much called the guy out for being an asshole and kind of made sure he got out of there. And then going down to North Carolina, East Wake High School is dealing with a situation where they had a group of students that were participating in an extremely racist group chat, with messages such as pulling triggers and shooting N-words kill N-word babies. One person wrote hashtag bring slavery back, and another person debated whether their screen name should be Black Slayer. So we're waiting on that. Could be a future contender. We're just waiting on some additional information to come out and some confirmation on this story, because it's very early in the news cycle on that one. No contest for Heather Patton this week. So we're going to send her to the bench. We'll keep an eye on what racism happens in the coming week. But Brian, were you surprised by Heather's easy win?
Not at all. This woman, she's what I consider her first tier. She is first tier racism. One of the things that it seems to just be a recurring theme, you know, it's where the voters lay. Angry white women dropping N-words. It is something that we can all get behind and vote for during the This Week in Racism poll.
And we are quickly, you know, we're barreling towards the end of the year. As you know, December will be the actual contest, but we will have about 6 or 7 more weeks of actual weekly competition before we get there. So I guess the question is now, you know, do people out there in the world start to get more racist because they feel, if not, they may get locked out of the tournament? Do you think we're going to see a spike in racism in the coming weeks?
I'm going to be honest with you, Ron. I don't believe we're going to see a spike because of the upcoming This Year in Racism bracket that we do. I do believe that we are going to see a spike, because one of the things that I've noticed happens is that when we send a strong winner to the bench, usually a week passes by, and then, oh, it's like the gates of racism have just opened up, and you get a plethora of hate just being spewed across. It's a beautiful thing.
I mean, it's a valid point. Gene Kramer had a hard time finding adversaries, and then who shows up but Heather Patton. And so we will see. Heather Patton's got two wins. Interestingly enough, we do have one number one seed left available. We have three previous people that have qualified through four wins. Does Heather end up winning out and getting that that coveted fourth number one seed in the fourth bracket? Or does someone more racist pop up closer to the end of her reign?
One thing I did want to say to you, because it's something you had expressed some concern as to whether we were going to get the nice, kind people at Baltica to sponsor the bracket this year. I will say that not only am I in negotiations with the people at Baltica, but we have a new name, a new brewer that has gotten involved in the negotiations. I'm hoping to play them against each other. This one's coming all the way from Kiev,
really,
in the Ukraine. Yes, this is Obolon Lager. They also serve an Obolon Premium. It's Obolon. All the way from Ukraine. I was speaking to my dear friend Hunter B, a local listener. He said that he used to do a lot of business in the Ukraine, had some great experiences with the nice people over at Obolon. And so I reached out to him this past week. I sensed that there was some interest. They asked me if I was planning on going down to Washington, D.C. at any time. I said it was possible if they really needed me to, but we are going to have some talks. I think it had something to do with the fact that we are a Yankees fan, and they said something about Rudy. I don't know. It might have been the movie about Notre Dame football. It seemed a little odd, kind of tangential to our conversation, but if Baltica's not in, I think I can get Obolon.
All right, well, you keep negotiating in good faith. I feel like you're going to make a deal that really benefits us and only us.
Oh, it's going to be a wonderful deal. It's going to be one of the best. It's going to be the greatest deal that's ever been made.
All right, well, let's move on and let's find out what's bothering us this week.
Ron and Brian's Beef of the Week.
Brian, what's your beef?
I feel like this is a little petty.
It can never be too petty for Beef of the Week.
Okay, people that eat at restaurants and leave their garbage behind when they get up and leave, and they don't throw it out.
I can see where that would get you fired up.
A couple times this week, I went out for lunch with some coworkers, and I could sit there and see other tables of people. Some of them were tourist families. Others were clearly working people, getting up, leaving their garbage on the table, and walking out. And clearly, these are not establishments where there's a waiting staff.
And we've talked about this in the past. It's kind of that social contract rearing its head again. I mean, it's just, you go to a fast food place or a quick service restaurant, and you should just know to clean up after yourselves. And not a lot of people do that.
Just don't be a fucking pig.
All right, that's fair enough. I don't think that's petty at all. I mean, I think it's looking out for the common man, and I think you should be applauded for that.
I think I'm the common man, Ron.
Well, you can be at times. I'm basic, you're common.
What's bothering you?
So this week, my beef is with a company called CoAdvantage. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but
the name sounds familiar, and I don't know why.
They're an HR outsourcing company, and they're also a company that the company I work for utilize for payroll and benefits. So we have this thing in Philadelphia where we pay a wage tax for the privilege of working in the city of Philadelphia. You pay 3% to the city.
Right.
So
is this an employer tax or the employee tax?
It's an employee tax. So it comes out of my paycheck that I pay direct to the city of Philadelphia.
So as an employee working, you pay an additional 3% to the city of Philadelphia.
Correct. And if you work and live in Philadelphia, you pay 6%.
Okay, I pay New York City tax.
There you go. So very simple. Okay.
Yeah.
So this is something that CoAdvantage is aware of. We were all set up on it. I mean, everyone that works in the hotel at the very least should have the 3% taken out. So I got a letter this week from the state of Pennsylvania. They're auditing my state tax return. Okay, no big deal.
Oh.
That's why you hire tax return people. But I'm going through the paperwork and I'm looking at my W-2 and I'm looking at my wife's W-2 and I see she has the city tax taken out. I'm not seeing the city tax anywhere on my W-2. I call my tax guy. I'm like, Paul, I'm like, where did you get the city tax number from? He's like, oh, I didn't see anything on your W-2, so I just made one up, which is another issue I'll deal with.
your tax guy just made up a number?
He was like, I think I put your uniform deductions in that line. I'm like, well, great. I'm like, call these people. Fix, make this go away, whatever it is. But come to find that for whatever reason in 2018, CoAdvantage did not deduct any Philadelphia city wage tax for me. And on top of that, has not deducted it for the entirety of 2019 either.
Oh.
So right now we're checking to see if anyone else in the company also got screwed over like this. So I'm sure I'm going to have a nice big check to write to the city of Philadelphia rather soon.
That's... Thanks.
This is the same company to tell you how talented they are. The hotel I work for was sold earlier this year, so CoAdvantage just needed to create a second company and transfer all of the employees over to it in their system. And in doing so, managed to first cancel everybody's health, vision, and dental benefits, and then also canceled everybody's FSA accounts as well.
Oh.
Yeah. So imagine, you know, you're going to get a prescription and your FSA card bounces.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
But you know what CoAdvantage is? They're the lowest cost provider of the service they do.
Which is why your company uses
them. That's why my company uses it, and that's why we end up doing more work in the end because of shit like this. So that's my beef. I think mine's a warranted beef.
That's a legitimate beef. However, as somebody who works in the human resources field, one of the things I always say to new employees when they start is check your pay stub. Make sure that it's right.
I will agree with that.
We will do our best effort to make sure that you get your right paycheck. Ultimately, it is your paycheck, and you're the one who's going to have to be dealing with the different government tax agencies. So we also need another set of eyes.
I will agree with that to an extent. If it hadn't already been set up and running for like a year or so, and then it
No. These guys are terrible. Guys are terrible.
All right, good. So what do you want to get to at the top of the show here? We were talking about my week.
Can I first congratulate you?
On?
You went 2-0 in the NFL last week.
Well, can I also congratulate you for also going 2-0 last week? So I believe we are both perfect in our NFL picks of the week.
Yeah, but I think your picks were more interesting, and I was analyzing them over the weekend. The fact that you took the Steelers getting 4 against the Ravens, I mean, having lost their quarterback, their backup being subpar, I sat there and said to myself, there is no way that the Steelers are going to beat the Ravens this week. You took the 4 points, and what I did not even consider was the likelihood that the Ravens win the game but do not cover. Only winning by 3 points. Ron takes it on the Steelers, flips it right back with your Vikings, -4.5 over the New Jersey Giants. Giants got slaughtered 28-10 by the Vikings. Ron, another 2-0 week for you.
And congratulations.
How do you do it?
I mean, it's just I have like a secret vision, a sixth sense, if you will, that I can just pick these games. But you, my friend, you're on fire too. I mean, I will say the Patriots pick, kind of a gimme, giving 15 to the Redskins and winning by 26. But again, I thought you were crazy taking the Broncos, even getting the 6.5. Turns out you didn't need any of those points. Broncos winning straight up 20-13. So
took the whole game.
I hope you cashed in on that one.
Hey, let's put it this way: the beers that I bought earlier today, straight winnings.
Nice.
Thank you. mybookie.ag.
So that leads us to our locks of the week for this coming week. Brian, I will tee it up to you. Since we're both undefeated, it's more of a coin flip as to who goes first, but I will let you take the wheel. Jesus, take All the right. wheel on these locks of the week.
First off, we're going to go with the easy one. Cowboys going up against the New York Jets, only laying 8.5 points. There is no reason to believe that the Cowboys do not roll over gangrene. Also, I'm liking the Seahawks on the road against the Cleveland Browns. Getting 2 points, I'll take my chances with Seattle.
Really? You're taking your chances with Seattle. All right. I mean, I like that. And what was the line you have on the game for that?
I've got the Seahawks getting 2 points.
Wow, that is ripe. I would take that line all day long. Let's see who I got here. I wrote down, I am going with the Monday night game next week. I like Green Bay giving 4.5 to the Lions. The Lions have been somewhat horrible this year, so I think Green Bay at home can easily win that by 4.5, if not more. I mean, I guess technically you couldn't win by 4.5, but it'd be fun if they did. And then I'm going to go, I mean, geez, there's some interesting picks here, but I am surprised that the Saints going into Jacksonville are underdogs. So I'm going to take New Orleans getting a point against Jacksonville.
All right. I think I like your strategy there. I think it seems a little similar to my Seahawks over the Browns. You know, you got a strong team on the road getting points. Yes, they're on the road, but they're the quality team between the two. I like your thinking.
So take all the money that you've won on our games so far, put it all on these four games in a parlay, and you guys are probably looking at a nice retirement fund based off of the wins we're giving you.
There you go.
What
I mean, I certainly never have to work again.
Yeah, very true. That's why we're able to do this each and every week. So, Brian, I like what it seems happened with most of Americans. I went out to see the Joker movie this past weekend. Caught it on Saturday night at my local movie tavern. There were no incels there shooting up the place, much like CNN was warning me. So do you want me to talk about the Joker movie?
First, I would like to ask, are you not the only incel that was there?
Good point. Very good point.
So we know you're happily married.
Yes.
I do want to hear your review. I've heard some very mixed reviews, and it's interesting because this is one of those movies where I've not spoken to anyone who had no opinion. I've not heard from anyone who said, oh, it was all right. I've heard from people that said it was total trash or it was incredibly disturbing. And people are still affected by it.
I'm going to say this. I will say this before I start my review. I think it is one of those movies that no one is going to have a middle ground on. You are either going to love this movie or you're going to hate this movie. I will say I think it is because you and I are students of film. You would say that, correct?
I would like to think that I'm a student of the world.
I mean, I remember those days hanging out with Scorsese, you know, with
Marty,
as we call him.
We call him Marty.
De Palma, talking about the art of film. And I think, you know, from a film standpoint, this is a beautiful film. Beautifully shot, beautifully laid out, you know, very, very well done. I think Joaquin Phoenix, a great acting performance. I think he's in 99% of this movie. There is relatively few parts of this film that he is not in. I think he gives a great performance. And that being said, I hated this movie.
Oh.
Hated it.
What did you hate about it?
I think it was very, very slow. And I don't know that there was much of a payoff for having waited as long as I felt I did to get to the end of the movie. So much so that the movie ended, the lights came up, I turned to my wife, and I was like, I feel like I should apologize for making you come see this movie.
And did she take your apology?
She was like, oh my God. She's like, I was worried that you liked it because I hated it as well.
All right. See, what I find interesting is that you didn't apologize to her. You said that you felt that you should apologize to her. Subtle difference, but quite important.
Don't give away my tricks of the trade, Brian, please.
Understood. So if you can walk me through the plot, obviously no spoilers because I would like to see this movie. And I know that some of our listeners are fanatic DC followers. I mean, I know sometimes you've shown a slight tendency to be able to appreciate the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but we know that you are DC to your core. I'm unfamiliar with the history of the Joker character.
And I guess for you, the good thing for you is that this is a new interpretation of the Joker backstory. So the fact that you don't know anything about the Joker is fine, because this is unlike any Joker story that's really been told in the DC universe.
Okay, that's good.
So Joaquin Phoenix, you know, plays Arthur Fleck, a guy who's kind of someone who just fades into the background, not someone that stands out. He works as a clown. He, you know, he does like children's hospital shows. He can be hired to promote your business. He lives, you know, in a small apartment with his mother. And, you know, basically the world just shits all over him. And, you know, eventually, you know, he also has this this Tourette's-like condition where he will just laugh inappropriately and he has no control over it.
Which makes him the Joker.
Eventually. So he just, and he wants to be a stand-up comic, but he's not very funny. So you basically see him, you know, be shit on by society until eventually, you know, he kind of snaps a little bit and takes it out on, you know, these guys that were beating him up on a subway car and kills all of them. And so his actions become a movement for the people of Gotham City to rise up against the rich and privileged. And they use this clown mask character because he was in his clown makeup from a gig he had done. And so I don't want to give too much else away, but there is a build up with De Niro's in there. He plays a talk show host that De Niro's in it. Robert De Niro.
I did not know this. I thought De Niro was in The Irishman.
He's in that as well. But De Niro plays a talk show host, kind of a flip of King of Comedy. And where, you know, the Joker is on the show towards the end of the movie. Again, don't want to give away the climax of it. Okay. But, and again, maybe I should be worried that I've become so desensitized to depravity and violence and everything else that there wasn't a lot in the movie that shocked me. And again, I think there were parts of the movie that were very well done. I just, for me, it was a very slow paced movie that didn't pay off for me at the end. And you know, there's a person I work with, she and I love, you know, the DC and the Marvel movies. And she saw me this morning. She's like, "Did you see it?" I was like, "Yes." She's like, "I loved it." And I was like, "I hated it." And we talked about why she loved it and why I hated it. And, you know, we came to peace.
That's very un-American of you.
I know. What did you hear?
What I heard, that it was emotionally disturbing, that it was unsettling, that it was not necessarily depressing, but it really made you question society as a whole and the very fabric that is holding us together, and how easy it can be for the social contract to fall apart. I also heard that it was a two-hour jerk-off session for Joaquin Phoenix.
When I tell you that there are very few frames of this movie that he is not a part of.
At any point did he sing Johnny Cash songs?
He did not. I was holding out a little bit of hope there, but that did not happen.
Disappointing.
Other disappointing. If I can throw a few more. Because it was just bad movie weekend in our house for some reason.
Now I want to know what else you watched that was poor.
We watched on Netflix this weekend. It released In the Tall Grass, which is a movie adaptation of a novella by Stephen King and his son Joe Hill. That was pretty bad. And then on pay-per-view, we watched The Dead Don't Die, which was a zombie comedy that had a great lineup. I mean, it's Bill Murray, Adam Driver, Chloe Svegny, Steve Buscemi, God, Danny Glover, Iggy Pop, Carol Kane, Tilda Swinton. I mean, just, I'm going to butcher as many Hollywood names as
I
can.
That is a cast and a half.
Power-packed lineup, and we got through an hour of it, and we were just like, do you even want to keep watching it? It just, again, slow, boring, not funny.
Ah, that's a shame.
Yes. Not worth my $5.99.
Well, you're just a sucker for that. I started watching last night the new season of Big Mouth.
And how is that? I've not had a chance to watch it just yet.
I've only watched one episode, and it's a continuation of last season. It does not feel like they're really. It almost feels as if like they've kind of peaked. And obviously, this is all just based on one episode, but it felt like they weren't really entering new territory. It was almost just like let's try and wring some more liquid out of this sponge.
Third seasons can be tough for a lot of series for some reason. That always seems to be like, it seems like a lot of creators work out about two seasons worth of material, and then they get to that third season and they're like, oh, well, we got renewed again. What are we going to do now?
Well, then how do you explain the third season of Barney Miller? I mean, that was what that show peaked during the third season.
Again, you do have the very rare exception to the rule, and that would be one of them.
That is the season I felt that Abe Vigoda as Fish carried it on his back.
The one thing I am looking forward to this week, October 11th, on Netflix, the Breaking Bad movie El Camino. Looking at the trailers, yes. Looks very very intriguing. I will be watching that when that comes out.
Now, should I go back and watch the end of Breaking Bad?
I feel like you, at this point, you probably want to watch the finale one more time just to, because it does pick up from the moment that Jesse escapes from the neo-Nazi group that had him making crystal meth and drives right off in his El Camino. Probably worth watching the finale one more time just so that you're totally up to speed with where the story is.
All right, that's not a bad idea.
What else do we have to review this week? We got some different reviews happening this week. What else are we going to talk about?
We got some celebrity deaths. I don't like bringing it in too early in the show because I know it kind of bums you out.
I mean, you know, there were some major passings this past week. So yeah, let's. In fact, I think this week is a good week. We can do grade these deaths because we had some high profile people passing away. So Brian, why don't you take it away?
First one took place on Friday. We lost the great Diane Carroll, captivating singer and actress from the Bronx, won a Tony Award, received an Oscar nomination, and made television history with her turns on Julia and Dynasty. Passed away this past Friday, the age of 84, in her home in Los Angeles after a long bout with cancer. Best known on Broadway for her roles in Carmen Jones and Porgy and Bess, but really where she took her start was when she went to NBC and starred as Julia Baker, a widowed nurse raising a young son on Julia. Broke a lot of racial boundaries that had been on TV for a long time.
I remember her more as Dominique Devereaux on Dynasty because she was fierce. She was one of the few in that show that could really stand toe-to-toe with Joan Collins.
And nobody could stand toe-to-toe with Joan Collins.
That's when soap operas were soap operas, my friend.
Yes. And where do we grade Diane Carroll?
I mean, you know, pioneer, trailblazer, you know, hasn't been in the public eye for a while, but, you know,
Well, she had cancer. She had cancer, Ron, so why don't you cut her a little slack?
Just the history and you know, the trailblazing that she did, I'm giving it an A.
An A?
Yep.
Ooh, I was going to go B minus.
I mean, that's...
I haven't heard from her in years.
That's for you to justify with your lord. All right, who else passed away?
Rock drummer, Ginger Baker, dead at the age of 80. Redefined the roles of drums in rock music, passing away this past Sunday in a hospital near his home in southeastern England. Ginger Baker was 80.
You know, the one thing I remember about Ginger is he really, really seemed like a down-to-earth guy. Not confrontational at all. I mean, I think I think everybody loved Ginger Baker. Did you hear anything differently?
I watched a documentary about him called Beware of Mr. Baker.
That doesn't sound promising.
It was a filmmaker who basically interviews Ginger Baker in his then home in South Africa. And basically, this guy threatened to beat the filmmaker, I would say, almost every 10 minutes of the movie.
I mean, I'm going to have to put that on my much watch list.
Well, don't rent it. You shouldn't have to. It's no. on... It's only $4.99 on iTunes, so you'll probably pay for it. But the drumming he did, you know, I would say Ginger Baker's right up there with Keith Moon of The Who, John Bonham of Led Zeppelin. I mean, you know, these are bands that that really picked up steam after Cream broke up. And that was the supergroup that Ginger Baker was in with Eric Clapton and bassist Jack Bruce. You know, he really kind of, what I would describe as, he brought some jazz combos and syncopation into what was just considered rock. Unfortunately, Mr. Baker had a little bit of a drug and alcohol problem, as by his own account, he quit heroin 29 times.
Well, I mean, you know, at least he kept quitting. You know, you fall off that wagon, you got to get back on it.
Well, apparently he was on the horse.
And our final, we got to rate that death. Ginger Baker, I'm going B-.
I was going to go B+.
All right. We're in the
obviously
same ballpark for that one.
You hate gingers.
Hey,
you know, it's, hey now.
And also we lost, this was a tough one, because this was someone I remember from my youth. Rip Taylor passed away at the age of 84. Those of you that might not remember him, known as the King of Confetti, the crying comedian, always liked throwing confetti around. As it turns out, I never knew why he did that, but I read a story after he passed away that he was doing an appearance on the old Merv Griffin show and apparently was bombing terribly and took his 5x8 cards that he had written his jokes on and tore them up and threw them up in the air and walked off the set, figuring his career was over, and it turns out everybody loved it. And so that was his shtick moving forward.
You know, what I liked about his career was, you know, basically growing up in the 70s, he literally, and it has nothing to do with his sexual orientation, but that man was a whore. He was a media whore. He literally would show up for any TV show. If you watch television the way I did growing up as a kid, you would see Rip Taylor on about two or three shows a day.
Yeah. I mean, he was on the Gong Show. He was on the $1.98 Beauty Show. I mean, just...
He did Match Card. Was it Match Game? And then you'd watch that. Then he'd be on the afternoon shows. Mike Douglas? He'd be on that. And then and he was on everything. Incredible hair.
Yes.
You know, for a man that was getting old, literally had just great hair. And what I liked about his, you know, it kind of went for a full circle when the Jackass movies brought him back out.
Yeah, he was in the first three Jackass movies, I believe.
Yes. Yes. It was nice. It was a nice little touch. I give Rip Taylor A-. Really, and when you think about it, the man was it was a time where flamboyancy was not really appreciated in Hollywood, and he broke down a lot of doors, a lot of barriers, and made a lot of people comfortable in areas where they weren't before.
I would agree with you. I'm gonna go A- as well. I think you nailed it, my friend.
There you go. Well, it's the first thing I've nailed in quite a while, Ron.
Hey, it's funny. Laugh.
Hey, I'm an incel.
Let's see. All right, those are obituaries. Those are the rated deaths.
There we go.
So we say rest in peace to all those that left us this past week.
Rest in peace.
Do we want to get to the album review we have?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So those of you out there that know Brian know that he is a huge Life of Agony fan, and they will have a new record coming out this Friday, I believe, October 11th. The Sounds
of Stars.
It is
this Friday.
And so you were able to snag us a pre-release review copy of this album.
Yes. I would like to say that I did not use any of my connections with the band or the band machine, as I like to say. I simply reached out as a member of the press.
Okay.
You know, I sat there and said that we have got one of the highest rated independent podcasts that are going on between white males in their mid-40s who live in nearby states. And they said, hey, we will give you a screener's copy. Listen, rate, review, subscribe below. Ron, you listened to it also.
I did, and I think, you know, I think we should mention that I'm not as familiar with Life of Agony, obviously, as you are. You are much more metal than I am. We have some similar music tastes, but I think you are a little more hard edge than I am.
Yes.
And so this album is a follow-up to their debut album, River Runs Red, which was a concept album. This is also a concept album. And can I tell you something, Brian, you might not know about me? I love me a good concept album.
Really?
I do.
Excellent. I did not know this.
Because here's the thing. As impressive as it is to be able to put together an album of 8 or 10 or 12 songs, I think it's that much more impressive to be able to tell an entire story over all those songs.
I would agree with that.
I'm a big Roger Waters fan.
I absolutely agree with that. Oh, no, I love Roger Waters. But we digress. So the idea was that in 93,
I think.
I think it was 93, Life of Agony, which is a band from Brooklyn, New York, put out a debut album called River Runs Red. And it is the concept of it is it tells the story from the perspective of a youth in Brooklyn, and basically everything's going wrong in his life. His girlfriend's leaving him. He gets fired from his job. He's getting kicked out of school. And it literally kind of puts the listener into the mindset of someone that's just been alienated by society and looks for a way out. And, you know, the story at the end is he commits suicide by slashing his wrists in his bathroom at his home. One of the things that the band, as they have matured over the years, their sound has become a little bit more accessible. I don't want to necessarily say it's softened so much, but, you know, the band is not comprised of angry teenagers the way it was 25 years ago. So the album that they've put out now is, you know, it's true to their sound. But the concept here is, what if that character from River Runs Red did not die in the tub, but survived?
And that's what you hear on the opening track of the album is the paramedics arriving,
yes,
you know, stabilizing him, saving his life.
Yes. So what did you think, Ron?
So I went back and I listened to River Runs Red because I had not, you know, heard the album before. So I liked that album. I thought it was good. Definitely just, you know, great guitar work, great drum work. I listened to the whole album, Sounds of Scars. And again, keep in mind, not that familiar with Life of Agony. But I thought it was a great album. I thought
really?
I was, and again,
I'm very glad to hear that.
Not being a huge metal guy, not being one that's really, you know, been following them for years like you are, I wasn't sure what to expect. And it was an album that I would definitely listen to, you know, over and over again. I think definitely a very polished record compared to what they put out in 93. You can hear the maturity and the writing in the vocals. I think it's especially appropriate, given that this is Mental Health Awareness Week, that they're really, you know, addressing the subject of suicide and, you know, surviving suicide and trying to make your life better. And I wouldn't say it was an overly optimistic end to the album, but I think it was a more optimistic end to the album than River Runs Red.
See, that's and the way I take it was that River Runs Red was really somebody's descent to rock bottom. You know, as it's, you know, the interludes between songs or the different days of the week as the week progresses. And it literally was, you could follow this person's, you know, as life gets worse and worse and worse to the point where they commit suicide. What I thought here, the interludes were going in the opposite direction, leading you away from rock bottom towards, you survived. You've gotten this far. There's something to be said for being here, for breathing, for having the ability to control the moment, the day. You're strong enough to react to what life has thrown at you so far. Continue doing it, and you're going to realize just how strong you are. I felt that this album was, and even not just lyrically more optimistic, but I thought musically it had a much more uplifting tone.
I would agree with that. I see what you're saying.
Than River Runs Red. I would say that there's going to be a lot of people who have been crying for a second River Runs Red for over 20 years, complaining no matter what the band musically is putting out. Oh, you should do another River Runs Red. I think that this is going to whet their appetite for expectations that are not going to be met. This band, Life Agony, certainly did not go out to try to recreate what was done 25 years ago, but was to tell the story their way at this time. They are going to be playing this weekend, if you are interested. They're playing this Saturday, October 12th, in Coney Island, taking it back to where it started. The kind people at Coney Island Brewing Company, as presented by the Jerry Farley, Life Agony record release celebration. They'll be performing at the Coney Island Brewing this Saturday at 8 p.m.
And I think one of the things
VIP packages are available.
There you go. I think one of the things I did like about the album is, you know, it wasn't them going back to the original album, just trying to rehash the same old thing. Like, it really was them taking what they had, you know, taking this world that they had established in that first album and really building off of it and really continuing the story. And yeah, and to your point, I mean, this person, you know, survives suicide, is married, has a wife, is attending, you know, therapy, you know, doing the things, has gone off their meds. So, I mean, again, you know, people sometimes stumble along the way for self-care. What, you know, the last song on the album, I Surrender, is the one that, yes. You know, what do you think the message was in that song? Like, that was the one that I was like, you know, I couldn't tell if they were saying, you know, I surrender to getting better, or I surrender to the fact that my life may not get better than it is right now.
The way I read the lyrics, the message I walked away with it is the fact that it's okay to stop feeling a need to be in control of everything, and to just kind of surrender control, surrender the need to own everything and make it yours and have everything be this nice little fitting thing. But it's going to be what it is.
All right. I think this is going to be a huge album for him, personally. I mean, that's how good it is. I think it's an album that will not only appeal to their hardcore fans, but I think it's got a great mainstream sound as well. And I don't want to say mainstream in a bad way, but kind of like you said, it's a little bit more upbeat than River Runs Red, but it's a solid album just from a music standpoint. Vocals, guitar, drums, just everything. Like, it was, it was a great album. There's no two ways about it.
Well, I think it's interesting to note that the producer of this album, Sylvia Massey, is well known for her work with Tool. She produced some of their earlier albums. And this album also features a new drummer. Veronica Bellino is, it brings a whole different kind of energy to the band.
And she beats the shit out of that drum set. I remember her warming up at the Broken Goblet before they played there. I mean, she brings it, no doubt.
Absolutely. So, and they are, the band will be going on tour right after the show in Brooklyn. They're going out to Europe. They're going to be doing a week in England. And then I think they're going to be following that by about another 3+ weeks throughout the continent of Europe. So that will be, they'll really be testing to see what the fans think of the new album at that point.
All right, check it out. Life of Agony, Sound of Scars. Speaking of surrendering, we appear to have surrendered in Syria, based on what Donald Trump announced, or the White House, I should say, announced earlier today for Donald Trump.
And I have mixed feelings about it.
Okay, why are your feelings mixed?
I will tell you this. I genuinely think that there is something inherently wrong with the fact that American soldiers are being used as, I want to say, hallway monitors in another part of this world that has never known peace.
Okay. And agreed. I mean, I think putting and U.S. soldiers in harm's way is a tough decision. But I guess if you were going to reverse a decision like that, does it make more sense to try and come up with some sort of transition plan?
Yes.
Or to say, we're just going to stand aside and whatever happens, happens.
No, this, I mean, you're not going to get me to say that this was well planned, that this is well thought up. This is Donald Trump waking up one day and just saying, I've had enough of it. Let's just pull our troops out right now. It's not being done in a way that's going to leave any type of structure and peace. You know, what people are saying is that the civil war in Syria, which had been really terrible for many, many years, seemed to have kind of hit an impasse, and life was starting to somewhat return to normal. This could start, you know, rip whatever wound had slightly healed and rip it right open, and people will start dying again. It's poorly being handled.
And how do you think it makes us look in the world community, especially amongst our allies? I mean, we're throwing the Kurds out and leaving them hanging in the wind. I mean, everyone is basically saying this is a win for ISIS, it's a win for Turkey, it's a win for Vladimir Putin and Russia.
I think that you used a word there that I think is, we kind of have to throw out for the next year and a half at the very least. We have no allies anymore. There, you know, we've got a leader in this, in the White House, who has made it very clear that he sees everybody other than himself as a potential enemy for different subject matters. He has publicly trash talked everybody except for Vladimir Putin
and Kim Jong-un
and the guy in Saudi Arabia, MSN.
and the leader of China also.
Winnie the Pooh, you mean?
Yes, yeah. I think it's safe to say Trump is a big fan of tyrants. I think you can say that unequivocally.
One of the things that, I mean, he clearly has a fallen victim to a cult of personality. He genuinely feels that he should be revered. He believes that his face should be on wall. I mean, the man puts his name on everything he touches. So the fact that he becomes president, I think he genuinely feels that there's no reason why he should not be the leader of everything, that he should have all power to do whatever he wants, and nobody should have the ability to stand up against him. Doesn't understand the separation of church and state, doesn't understand separation of power, just believes that everything should go his way to be done whatever he wants. He said earlier today that he has unmatched wisdom.
Yes. Yes, great and unmatched wisdom.
Yeah, so it's ludicrous. So what I find interesting is the fact that he seems to buddy up to these dictators. And it's odd because he will take people, he'll take countries like Germany, like England, allies of ours for the past 50 years, and will immediately start ripping them apart for not, you know, contributing enough to the UN, not contributing enough to NATO and whatnot, but then turn around and look at somebody like Russia, who has clearly been an enemy of ours and never stopped, and we'll talk about how great their leadership is.
Well, he clearly does not favor governments that value the voice of their people, that value an equal government, and instead he leans towards people that, you know, squash any language that goes against what they say. I mean, people that will literally put their people to death. You know, again, I think if he could, Donald Trump would put people to death. There's no question.
He's doing it right now. He's doing it right now at the border.
Right.
He jokingly said to some border agents, I believe, that they should be able to shoot they should be able to shoot the migrants in the legs to slow them down.
Right. And he wanted boats with alligators in them.
Yes. He does not see other people as human beings. Just it's scary. It's scary to watch. So I believe he does not care what message he's sending. I think he thinks he's placating to Nebraska and Ohio. And I think a lot of people will die as a result of this.
And in addition to what is going on in Syria today, there is also conversations that the Trump administration wants to exit the Open Skies Treaty, which basically is a treaty of 34 countries that allows each of these countries to kind of monitor the military actions of each other to make sure that there is nothing inappropriate going on or nothing, no aggressions against either of these 34. Not quite sure why the Trump administration is against this, but one former military official said that, the United States pulling out of the Open Skies Treaty would be, quote, a gift directly to Vladimir Putin. So again, he's handing Syria to Russia to an extent. And
if we pull out of the Open Skies Treaty,
also helps Russia.
How does it help Russia?
Because we're one of the primary forces that are monitoring Russia's military via treaty. And so we exit this treaty, the other countries don't have the same resources that we do to track the movements of the Russian military. So you've got the United States military basically vacating Syria, and then we're also going to say, hey, you know what? We're not going to track the movements of the Russian military either. A very interesting combination at the same time.
Oh, this guy has made it incredibly easy for Russia to sail through these past couple of years. I don't think any of us are surprised, and I don't believe that there is any that they... opposition to him is coordinated enough to really call him out on it.
We'll see. I mean, Pat Robertson came out against him today. And so
Pat
Robertson said that because Donald Trump wants to pull the troops out of Syria and throw the Kurds to the wolves, that he has forsaken his mandate into heaven.
Oh, yeah.
So Pat Robertson spoke out about it. Meghan McCain, very vocal. Even Lindsey Graham, which I'm sure by tomorrow morning, Lindsey will be back in lockstep with Donald. But correct. Even Lindsey Graham today tweeted that he was encouraging the president to reconsider this course of action in Syria.
Even Moscow Mitch came out against it.
Yes.
I mean, this is universally disagreed with.
Yep.
It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yes. See what else happens.
I don't have
week.
A lot of hope.
Bernie Sanders had a little bit of a heart procedure or a heart attack, depending on who you listen to.
I listen to the mainstream media.
Well, they're going to lie to you, Brian. It's all fake news. I don't know why you would listen to them.
Well, according to NBC, he had a heart attack and is currently recovering in his Vermont home.
And from what I understand, he has also dropped out of next week's televised debate. There'll be nine Democratic people. So what's your take on this, Brian?
I think this is this probably slashed his chances of winning in half.
I don't think he'll be able to continue on the campaign path.
Do you think he goes back to it, or he just kind of gives up on it?
I think he will go back to it, and then I think he will find that from a health perspective, he will need to come off the road. It's just,
right.
I mean, it is difficult for, someone incredibly healthy to maintain the schedule and the pace that you need to for a presidential campaign. I think after a setback like this, especially at his age, and listen, not saying he's too old to be president. I'm not saying he's too old to be active. I mean, we saw Jimmy Carter out there today at 95 years old, helping to build a new home for Habitat for Humanity. But there's, it's a lot. And when you are going up against a candidate like Donald Trump, you need to be 100% at all times.
Well, Donald Trump is the healthiest president we've ever had.
Yeah, I mean,
there's no reason
fittest,
why he can't live to 120.
Healthiest. No one has been more healthy than this president.
No, no, not at all. And he'll the problem with it is that he'll just literally will just bash Bernie about his inability to live through one term.
I am still surprised that he is yet to make a comment about the Bernie Sanders health condition.
Which probably means he's had a couple heart attacks.
at least two or three.
Yeah, it's just I when I saw that happen, I looked at it and said that it's over for him. Suddenly, I'm starting to look at Kamala Harris.
All right. Although Elizabeth Warren has made some significant gains and is leading Joe Biden in a number of polls right now.
I don't think she's electable. She's not personable. She's not likable. She's not attractive the way Hillary was. I just don't know that she can pull it off.
All right. Let's see. Our last topic.
Maybe Tulsi Gabbard.
Maybe.
If Tulsi Gabbard, she might be able to do
it. Listen, I know you like Tulsi. We get it. You like the crazy ones.
Shit, that was low. That was really low, Ron.
I try and get at least one insensitive dig in per episode.
All right, well, speaking of insensitive digs.
Yes.
That's all I had. I wanted to make it seem like I had a transition there, but I really didn't.
So our last story here is we did have a verdict in the Amber Geiger trial that we were talking about on last week's episode. We talked about how we were somewhat concerned because they were allowing the jury to consider the Castle Doctrine, thinking that was setting up for an acquittal. Instead, convicted of murder and sentenced to 10 years. Agree or disagree with the decision?
Agree.
Okay.
Think she should be doing more.
Agreed.
Because if you get 10 years in prison, yeah, I still have a very hard time understanding how you can enter somebody's home, even if, and this is someone who lives in an apartment. So I understand that the floor plan of apartments from one floor to another is exactly the same, but when you put your key in a door and you open it, it's not going. It's going to look different the second that door slightly opens. I have a very hard time understanding that were she not under the influence of some type of substance, alcohol, whatnot. I don't understand how she goes into an apartment that's not hers and immediately pulls out a gun and kills someone. I don't see. To me, 10 years just doesn't. It doesn't seem to warrant the crime.
I agree that, I wish the sentence had been longer. But I guess, another way to look at it is think about the fact that in the state of Texas, a white police officer was actually convicted for murdering a black person.
True.
And I think
this is
a lot more than I think any of us ever anticipated, considering the fact that they didn't even want to arrest her after it happened. I mean,
yes,
she walked around for a week before the police were like, all right, I guess we should charge her with something.
We got to do it. We got
to
do it.
So to go from that to getting a conviction for murder and getting, a 10-year sentence is at least something.
Yes. And the other thing, and I would like your take on this one, is the fact that the judge, after the sentence had been handed down, what is the judge doing getting off the bench to give the Amber Geiger a hug and handing her a Bible?
I
haven't seen anything like that.
I don't know enough about the judge to really say. I mean, maybe this is something this judge does, like you're going to jail, find some Jesus. I don't know. But and Botham Jean's brother also hugged her and forgave her. His mother was less forgiving, rightfully so. But I think a judge should not get involved with a defendant convicted or not like that, because it throws the impartiality of that judge into question. Thankfully, both the verdict and the sentence were carried out by the jury, so you know that takes that part out of the equation. But yeah, I think it was a little inappropriate.
I almost understand the son of the guy that she killed trying to sit there and say, you need to be punished for what you did, but I can forgive.
Right.
I think it showed that, that kid's a better human being than I am. But I didn't understand the judge in the role that It's her job. What is she doing hugging a defendant?
Now, the interesting twist in the past week since this case was settled is that a key witness in this murder trial was shot and killed Friday evening. Joshua Brown, he was one of the primary witnesses that testified in the Amber Geiger trial. He was also scheduled to testify in the civil suit that was filed against the Dallas Police Department due to this incident. And he mysteriously was found on the ground with multiple gunshot wounds, taken to Parkland Memorial Hospital, and died from his injuries. No suspect.
Do you know who also died at Parkland?
What's that?
Do you know who also died at Parkland?
Lee Harvey Oswald.
And John Kennedy.
Really?
They both died at Parkland.
Interesting.
That is not a, if you are ever sick in the Dallas area and they say, we're going to take you to Parkland, do not go.
So the police have been very quiet on this. A lot of people, though, including attorney Lee Merritt, who represents Botham John's family, is going to be keeping an eye on this. And hopefully we'll get some more information coming out in the coming weeks about this tragedy. Brian, I think that's all we have for our free edition this week. We're going to be moving over and recording the Patreon momentarily, correct?
We've got some more. We're not done. I mean, we got stories. We still, I mean, you got Robert De Niro getting sued by a former employee. We've got one, what I feel is the best wedding story coming out of Pennsylvania ever. A lot of stuff going on here. And the only way you're going to get to hear it is if you sign up at our Patreon at patreon.com/TheRonAndBrianPodcast.
Or just go to RonAndBrianPodcast.com. We've got a link to the
Even
Patreon.
Better.
We've got a link to all of our social media. You can email us. We've got the web store there. So it's really just a one-stop shop for you. RonAndBrianPodcast.com. But in the meantime, if you don't want to subscribe, we understand. We just ask that you listen, rate, and review, and join us here again next week. Brian, anything else before we roll on out?
No, I actually would like to disagree with you.
What would you like to disagree about?
I think people should subscribe.
Well, no, I mean, people should
It's only
subscribe.
It's only $5 a month to be able to get an extra half and 50% extra material than what we're offering here for free for only $5 a month. To me, it's unconscionable that people are listening to this podcast, and for the price of a fancy cup of coffee at Starbucks, they are not becoming a patron of ours.
I think it's safe to
that
say.
I think,
so we should really go after the 1% and say they have no excuse for subscribing to the Patreon, because they are technically paying lower taxes now than the middle and lower class for the first time in U.S. history. So,
frankly, I would accept corporate. I would accept corporate sponsorships. There's no reason for
maybe
this.
Maybe your Ukrainian brewery will sign up for a Patreon.
Oblon.
But in the meantime, we'll move on over to Patreon. Again, listen,
let's do it.
Rate, review. We'll get the exit music going here. Brian, I love you, my friend.
Love you more.
Catch the rest of you on the Patreon.